Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take. And this week on The Local Take, we're turning to politics as the 2020 election cycle races into high gear. The current resident of the White House kicked off his campaign. And this week, the top 20, yes, you heard that right, the top 20 Democratic candidates are debating over two nights. I reached out to our in-house political analyst, Dr. William Boone from Clark Atlanta University. Dr. Boone, welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And I also asked Ms. Yolanda Lattimore, the original social media guru, she was doing it before it was even called social media, to join us. Yolanda Lattimore, Ms. Dryerbuzz, welcome back to The Local Take.
Thank you.
I wanted us to do a political show because while it has been extremely difficult to keep up with the insanity that is our current political situation, occasionally something bubbles up to the top that is so discordant. It's like my ears hurt and I have to go, wait a minute, is that fake news? And that happened this month in an interview with our sitting U.S. president in a nationalized television interview. He said that he would accept intelligence from foreign entities and governments on his opponents, that he'd meet with them without contacting the FBI, because he said he's never thought to contact the FBI. And Yolanda, I immediately thought of you, because when we were talking last about privacy and Facebook and politics and
congressional
Zuckerberg went before the congressional hearings and he listed all of the things that they did. And you mentioned he was advertising to say we can still do these things. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what this sounded to my ear. Like, hey, I'm looking for intelligence on all of my opponents. Mm-hmm. If you've got it, I can be swayed.
Right.
I can be influenced, almost bought and corrupted.
It was an absolute call to action. It was like slide in my DMs from the president of the United States. I think the thing that is most shocking to us is that the president, not that he will have those kinds of conversations. Well, it is that he will have those kinds of conversations in a setting. And he has people on staff to say to him, Mr. President, you can't say that. And nobody does this. And so we're forever, ever shocked by it. But you just got to wonder what slid into his DMs at that time.
Well, it's just like when he called for the Russians to hack the Democratic Congress, Hillary's emails. And the next day, the proof in the pudding is that the Russians hacked the DNC.
Yeah. It is clear that Trump, he needs no filter. There's no filter to talk about. But you're talking here about the calculated plan, it seems to me. Because remember, several days before, his son and Kushner, his son in particular, had been called back to Congress to talk about that very question again.
The Russian meeting that was supposed to be about adoption.
Right, the one that was supposed to be about adoption met in Trump Tower. And it was really a meeting to supposedly get dirt on Hillary Clinton. That was really the genesis of the meeting. So what we get now is Trump, once again, well, remember, 2016 is Redux, it's coming back. So the same tactics that got him there in 2016, he hopes to get it back this time. And you're right. Clearly, it seems to me, I think an argument can be made that there's something going on in Trump's mind between he and foreign nations. We can talk about the Russians. We can talk about any other nation. And Trump sees no difficulty in just simply sending signals to these folks, indicating that, indeed, if you have something on my opponents, give it to me. Which means, of course, that the opponents will have something they can hold against them.
You said something going on in Trump's mind, okay, with these foreign leaders. But is there something also going on with the leaders? We know our president doesn't have the dignity not to do this, but what about these leaders? I mean, is there something
that would stop them from sliding into his DMs?
Right.
Oh, no. Because in the world of foreign policy and world politics, you know, one gets what one can. If indeed they can get information to a person who may or may not become president again, then they will do that. Mm-hmm. Certainly the Russians saw an opportunity here because it was clear that the Russians were anti-Clinton. and which, of course, translates in a certain roundabout way is pro-Trump. So do everything you can. And the Trump people were aware of that.
Right.
And I do not buy the argument that because they are, quote, new, unquote, to politics. That doesn't make any sense.
No, because even when the FBI director came out with a statement saying this is against the law, he doubled down.
Yes, he did. Well, which is his tactic anyway. I'm right, always right, never wrong. But you're right. But I think
he called on Norway. I'm actually wondering what he thinks Norway may know because he called them out.
Particularly called them out.
Yeah, well, he has a penchant for Scandinavian countries.
I mean, that was just amazing to me. And brings us right to the Democratic field. And this conversation is taking place before the debates, which will start on Wednesday of this week. So we've got 100 Democratic candidates for president. You know, from Biden to Bernie to Kamala, Elizabeth Warren. What happened to today, the days when political leaders would come together, they would decide maybe these three folks are the best of the best, and that's what we're going to present. How do you even manage this kind of election cycle with this many people? And someone just got in this week. De Blasio late to the game, but, you know, people are still joining.
I remember having a conversation with C.T. Vivian, even about Atlanta's mayoral race. We had the same problem. And understandably, it is a problem with too many candidates. And I remember asking him about us having so many candidates. And he told me it's beholden to them. They've got to clear the field. You know, naturally we want to get to we want to have that problem where enough people feel as civic engaged enough to get into the politics to try and represent us, right? So we want that problem, but when we don't have as much time as we really need, you know, to narrow this field. And I think the field is going to narrow pretty quickly because the first thing as a voter, you start looking at, you're like, okay, you kind of associate, well, who's in it just kind of for the resume, you know? And I know how quickly we went to, okay, so who we're really looking at all these people trying to figure out who's going to be vice president. Because I think we've kind of figured out who we want to, you know, as we narrow down the field, who might really be up for the nomination. Right. So we're kind of looking at everybody as thinking, you know, and they say you don't run to be second. But as a voter, we're looking like, OK, who might be vice president? You know, who does our presidential candidates need to pick? Because quickly, as soon as they said they weren't just saying that Biden needs to get in the race, they were already saying Biden and. And that's something you don't do. You allow them to get in the race. You allow the field to be narrow. And it seems like we just kind of want to skip that process.
Yeah, it is. But one of the problems that you're having is a problem of democracy, quote.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah, it's a problem of democracy in the sense that given the nature of American political parties, anybody can be a member of that party, anybody can run, right? Anybody can declare him or herself to be a nominee for the party's presidential candidate. But I think also, but more seriously, within the Democratic Party, what you're seeing is demographic shifts. You see a younger group of folk. You see an older group of folk, and then there's also those in the middle. But you also see a kind of recognition now that folk like African-Americans, and particularly African-American women and women in general, dominate the Democratic Party's base. And they've got to deal with that. And so you get that little progressive group. And so that's where the Democratic Party is right now. So it's not a cohesive unit that one would like to think of. The only thing holding them together right now is to beat Trump. Get Trump out.
And I don't think that's enough to move the needle. And I think this is a result of Trump. Mm. The most unlikely candidate won the race in 2016. And I think that's just empowered some people to think, if he can do it, you know, why not me? Why can't I do it? And I know we all grow up with our parents saying you can be anything you want, you can be president. But there are some people that not only can't be president, but shouldn't be president. And so is that what we have gotten into, this thing where, you know, Marianne Williamson, love her to death, inspirational author, but is she really a presidential candidate? We still have people calling for Oprah to get in this race. They're saying Oprah is the only one that can do it. Can anyone be president?
And keep in mind, the vice president selection can come from those that are not in the race.
Right, absolutely.
So, you know, there's still a whole, I mean, each of these people that's in the race has to already be thinking of that, because when you talk about we're at a point of being with, you know, old school demographics are gone.
Right.
Well, you've got new school demographics. We really don't know who can truly lead this. I mean, I know we're getting ready to go through something we've seen before, you know, the caucuses and all of that, you know, and there's this natural process. We think that people who lead are out front and leading these things, but we have seen somebody come from behind and the tides are shifting.
Yeah. Without a doubt, it's a really different kind of politics now. Trump has inaugurated a different kind of politics. Now, what we have with the Trump thing, of course, in 2016 was taking advantage of a couple of things, taking advantage of Electoral College, taking advantage of Hillary Clinton, who was terribly unpopular within the Democratic base, African-American in particular, African-American women, and apparently women in general. So he was able to take advantage of that right away.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have now, though, is Bernie Sanders jumping out again, leading what the remnants of the progressives inside the Democratic Party. And what he's done, of course, is forced other Democrats to latch on to things that he talked about in 2016.
The free college
universal healthcare, universal income, all of those wonderful
progressive socialist ideas.
Right, yes, yeah, supposedly socialist ideas. But so we have a different kind of ball game now. And I think one of the things that we as people who don't run candidates is that if I'm running a presidential political campaign, one of the things I'm concerned about, one of the things I'm aiming at, as the Trump people did and has done in the past, is the number of electoral votes. And where are those electoral votes going?
Right.
It is not always the popular vote that gets you to the
right.
presidency. It's the number of electoral. Trump's
governorship.
Yeah,
that didn't work.
Yeah, the Trump's campaign is a good example of that. They went and got, they were able to collect those votes.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton did help by not really campaigning strongly and hard enough in areas she should have. But certainly that's what he did.
Well, that brings me to bad candidates, because we've got some people in this cycle who've run multiple times, including our own Uncle Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
He's never been a good candidate. Hillary was never a good candidate. I'm not saying she didn't know and wasn't smart enough to be president, but she just wasn't a good candidate. Elizabeth Warren. Love all her plans. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone knows that girl. She's the girl that knows how to get everything done. Her voice drives you crazy. You get sick of seeing her. But in the end, the gets done. You know what I mean? We've got six women running for president on the Democratic ticket. White women don't vote for women. If we get one of those wonderful women, Kamala, Klobuchar, Gillibrand, aren't we going to be in the same dichotomy as Trump versus a nasty woman, as he's going to proclaim?
Well, we got to go back to that again.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you know, Trump would love to have one of the women running against him, so he can do the same kind of thing he did to Hillary. You know, that bullying kind of stuff. You know, the name calling, the demeaning,
following her across the stage.
But I mean, don't you think that Biden is responding to a national call, a demand for that?
And
that's why I still say he's an out front candidate.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Biden certainly appeals to, quote, regular Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look into who can beat Trump, and their idea is if you put a black person, African American, or a woman, it's problematic. But to put a good old boy like Biden, who embodies not only a streak of decency, but also another streak.
He said a streak of decency.
Right. Because he says and does some a lot of right things. But at the same time, he has that kind of persona. That
he's got old school and new school demographics.
Right.
He appeals to the old school. And I mean, new school, everybody knowing him because of Barack Obama.
Right.
Even though he is trying to run a campaign aside from that bit of history,
right.
I'm like, we're like, why? Because that's really what the call to action is. People want him in there to continue Obama politics or just the feel good America that
right.
we, you know, we can't say great again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think he's just falling. I think there's a call to action for him to be there.
Yeah, there is. There is support for him, especially among the regulars, right? one of the regulars, one of the
elected. The regular
Democrats. People who want to be comfortable. When you say regular, you're talking about people who want to be comfortable.
I'm talking people like John Lewis, mm-hmm. people like my boy Clyburn mm-hmm. out of South mm-hmm. Carolina, even mm-hmm. Pelosi, that kind of leadership crowd.
Right.
And even sometimes the folk who give money to the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. they too are interested in somebody like Biden. Because the other folk is somewhat untried at that level. I mean, Kamala Harris sparked some people. I don't think Cory Booker does as much generating enthusiasm as some would like them to do.
Exciting, mm-hmm. exciting the base.
Exciting the base, right.
I haven't seen or kept tabs with the money mm-hmm. yet. We haven't really even seen a draw on raising funds. Well, who's leading in that area?
I think some people have shocked the fundraising. Buttigieg mm-hmm. has shocked, mm-hmm. but I know America is not going to elect a gay man to be president. I don't think that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful that he's there, but I don't think that's going to happen. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's a hurdle for him to get over. In a way, the problem that he's having in the city now acts as a good way of excusing him from the race. Mm-hmm. Because you see, he didn't handle that too well. And the folk in this city, especially African-Americans, are not that thrilled with him. Some are, some are not. I mean, that kind of thing can begin to ruminate around his thing without mm-hmm. directly talking about his sexual preference.
Right? And is the not Trump message, I mean, the Orlando newspaper recently endorsed, anyone except mm-hmm. Trump. Yeah. I just don't think the not Trump message
is going to... It didn't
work
for Hillary.
It
did not work in the first one because the biggest punchline that echoes in my brain every day, there was the punchline, Obama told a joke where Trump said something about Obama. He said, well, at least I'll be president. I get so mad with that each and every day because the man is president. We were so assured that Trump would not ever become president, and this man is president. So you can't get behind any microphone, any podium, and just say and go on the fact that people are not going to vote for Trump again. Because it's not even, you have to contend with the fact it's not that people may vote for him again. It's just enough people might not vote. We've got to look at that.
That is your biggest problem. I think mm-hmm. that is a problem for the Democrats. Enough people did not vote last time. And those who did vote, especially within the white demographic, especially women, voted for Trump. Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. in that demographic, black men and white women decided, in my opinion, that patriarchy was more important.
Yes, that's right. And that is as strong as a kind of anti-gay kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it manifests itself with women, not just with mm-hmm. men. Mm-hmm. It manifests with women. Women cannot run, a country. In spite of the fact that this is probably one of the few democracies in the world that does not have a woman.
even Middle Eastern countries right. have had women leaders. Right. India. This is not Egypt.
Yeah, you have a series of women leaders across
the world.
The
UK. Yeah. Australia. Yeah. South America. I mean, every continent has had a woman leader. And America just says no, even though we're supposed to be the place.
I don't think it's just that America says no. If you look at the campaign, the very minute Hillary started her campaign, women wanted her to champion them just for the sake of being women. And we just never saw that. We never saw that because, her thing was always, let's get beyond our gender. And it's like, do you look at the polls? Mm. Do you look and see how we vote and who leads in these elections? I mean, that was just a problem. And it'll be a problem again this time if we don't speak to that,
I'm still just amazed. I mean, because as a little girl growing up, I would have never thought Australia would have a women leaders before the United States, or India would have a woman leader before the United States. And then after I kind of got used to that going on, mm-hmm. I didn't think South America would elect women presidents before the United States. I really didn't. But clearly, patriarchy mm-hmm. is winning.
Yeah, patriarchy is winning. I think you should not overlook the fact there's another factor here in terms of that basic evangelicalism religion that too has a strong patriarchal strand as well in terms of who should dominate. No matter which religious sect you come across in this country, The whole business about patriarchy is very, very strong.
And even in the black church, there's still problems with women in the pulpit.
All praying in church. As basic as that. So it runs deep. It's something that is so pervasive in American society that people just inculcated and becomes a thing where you only think you can portray or see people in certain positions. Mm-hmm. Positions are gendered. And the presidency in this country since its inception has been male gendered and not female. And so you're going to run into that. That's not going to stop anytime soon, because you're talking about a really sea change. Because even in a lot of progressive groups, you see this manifest in very small ways in terms of who's out front.
I think it's echoing also in the new school demographics as well. Yeah. That's I'm like sitting here and I'm trying to find where it's not, and it's still there. It's still there. But I just feel like there's got to be a way to turn this. One problem I'm also seeing already is the situation with Hillary is the other candidates not getting enough media. Mm-hmm. You know, already we get a full-on stoppage and disruption of everything when Trump is having a rally and he's on the move and so forth. We're not getting that full-on stoppage with the other candidates when they're having their rallies and so forth.
I think what we should do, those Democrats who, you know, following this and very interested in participating in the party's election and the other things that go with that, this is going to window down very quickly. It's going to window down very quickly, especially after the two debates this upcoming week. You're going to see people falling off. A lot of that has to do with the media, how the media follows, how the media and how they portray in the media, and who gets the zingers in and who doesn't get the zingers in.
Right.
And these are the memorable phrases. Everybody's going to be working on a memorable phrase, and the media's going
who
to begin.
Stalks who stalks trolls it,
right.
Who?
and who got beat up on the podium. Mm-hmm. So it's going to wind itself down. I mean, you got 20, at this moment, you have 24 announced candidates, 20 of whom will show up on Wednesday and Thursday. And it's going to wind itself down to probably the top four or five, probably by 4th of July.
What do you think the top, I mean, when we think about the questioning of that and the topics and how these debates are going to run, what do you think is going to lead?
In terms of the issues?
Yes, issues.
Well, I think if
do we even get to talk about issues?
Right. You don't issues. But if the Democrats are smart, they'll look back and look at what people are talking about. People are really talking about health care.
Yeah.
They're really talking about health care.
And
that other demographic, that younger demographic, I mean, when I say young, I mean people who recently graduated from college and a little beyond. They're talking about that debt they owe to college,
student loans
that is out there. Business about pay equality, that is out there as well. So if the Democrats are smart, they begin to zero in those and let Trump beat Trump.
I hope so. I hope that the focus is not on Trump, but it's on issues.
Right.
And, you know, we're taking this moment to talk about politics right now, but people still won't go and vote. Even after the Trumpito disaster, people didn't show up for the mayor's election in Atlanta. The runoff, less than 20% of the people showed up. They just had a runoff District 3. Less than 10% of the people showed up.
I looked at the numbers. We had a neighborhood election, and we want to say like 500 people decided that vote. 500.
What?
Less than 500.
What do we have to do to get people to understand that these abortion laws, these, you know, the EPA being defunded and deconstructed before our eyes, all of these things matter because you didn't vote?
Well, I think one thing, when we talk about getting our younger demographics to understand how important voting is getting them to understand that these are lawmakers. Now, we have enough generations now that understand that we are governed by laws and they can change our lives. We've got to get back to getting away from this person is popular, and understand that, again, the issues have got to lead, that we need lawmakers. You cannot have the society that we want. It's going to be determined by the lawmakers that we put in place. And so if you think back to one of the ways that the last elections were disrupted is misinformation about how how to and where to vote. Now, we have all this early voting. We have all kind of ways of voting now. Already there are stories out there. I think the headline recently that one place the voting machines won't be ready. So now you got to change the election date. So the confusion is already starting.
Yeah, it's very, you know, the question you pose is a perennial question. You know, we don't have an exact answer for that. I mean, folk tend to vote who are much older, who have a vested interest, who say in what's going on. If you're a parent, you may vote. Mm-hmm. But with certain age demographic and certain economic levels, people simply do not see any, don't have any stake in this. Mm-hmm. And something as simple, quite frankly, as training, educating, and teaching people civics,
which is not taught, not taught school anymore.
Right? I mean, that sounds kind of, well, that's old. You may be correct, but the problem is, folks don't. Number one, they don't understand the systems. Systems mm-hmm. working against them. They're right. Mm-hmm. It's working against you simply because folk who are in power have built it to work against you. So, but people don't. But there's not an understanding of that. There's no real challenging. I mean, there are folk who are prepared in the state of Texas. They take out certain textbooks because they extol certain truths mm-hmm. about the mm-hmm. history of Texas and the country at large. Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes, you need to begin to teach people who are 6 years old, if not younger, and begin to just inculcate them with the whole idea about, if you're talking about a democratic society, you're talking about an open society, then you have to tell them about how you do that, what that means. And then that sort of grows up. I don't think they've taught civics in this country for at least 5 decades.
Interesting you say that, because yeah. I remember growing up, it was always the, I know because it was taught in school for us, but and politics came on so early for us. And you went home and you talked about, you know, grandparents, yeah. are you voting? Parents, are you going to vote? I mean, my kids, mom, you going to vote? Because they would always have mock elections right. and different things like that in school. So, you know, I knew I've got to allow them to see me going and voting. And one of the things, let's talk about kudos to social media now, is everybody wants to post their voter sticker, right? That's a trend. You cannot get that sticker, okay? Mm-hmm. And one thing they should do, please change it every year for that person that's going to go try and find their old one. So can we get a new one each year, right? We need a new one, and we need, you know, new incentives, because people, you know, we've been getting the donuts and all this other kind of stuff. So we need that. Make that a new one every year. And because social media has made us more civic-minded and socially conscious.
But I
right?
do tell people, posting on social media and actually going out and knocking on doors and actually
a little bit further than that, right? Is,
you got to do a little bit more than just posting on
and
your
again,
social media
And again, that comes back to the awareness. You know, I tell people all the time, if you can't get mad at the people that are working the polls, because those are your neighbors. Right. Those are your civic-minded neighbors who are already in workshops right now learning about the new process, learning about the new machines, and they're going to be there throughout the process. And the fact that we no longer vote on this one day, it's now a month long, you know, process.
Yeah, I think sometimes we overlook the fact that generally in this country, there's a kind of unspoken discouragement about participation and about teaching children about this. And you got to get across that. You got to get over that, because if you get into discouragement, they can't do anything for you. There's a need to teach that child
subtle
ways of doing that, right?
Microaggression towards voting.
And that manifests itself and becomes pervasive throughout society. Mm. That's why, I guess, because I'm an educator and an academic, that I think that I think we're prepared to even bring kids in on Saturday to talk about these things and to give them kind of training that they can do. Whatever it takes to have an engaged population. And so a population that would look at a Trump and say, "Ooh, that man is killing us." I mean, for instance, right now, there's a distraction with Trump. Trump and his people started out on day one distracting him as simply said, "We're going to tweet this." And at the very same time, you mentioned this earlier, EPA, the rules are being changed. My friend Dr. Carson is changing rules in the public housing, the affordable housing area. These things have been sliding right under the
restrictions overturned.
And people just don't understand that when Trump leaves, even after 4 years, it's going to take twice that amount of time to get back to where you were.
And you're talking about
clean air and water.
Right.
And that's
right.
What voting talks
exactly.
about, right?
Exactly.
So that's what participation, because to some of us, talking and voting are just easy things to do. Mm-hmm. Participating in your community.
Right.
That's the thing you really need to do. But certainly those basic things you should do.
One thing I think that we could talk about it is as far as getting people involved in this, it's signing day. That first time when the president sits down at his desk the first time and all of those things that he gets to sign without anybody being involved in. Everybody needs to market what their signing day is going to be like. That's how you get people. Because when you sat there and you watched, it was one thing when you watched Obama and his signing day and then Trump and his signing day, right? And the disruption that went on. Everybody in this campaign, I mean, because signing day is big. Everybody knows what signing day is. I mean, even if they don't know the political side of signing day, it's a day that's celebrated. I've got some power. Right. So all of our candidates, you know, y'all could put out, what would you sign? Start talking about that early, right? If you're going to want to wipe out student debt on my first day, you know, what would you sign? I mean, we've got to get the issues on the table. We have got to find out where everybody is on fundraising. What would it look like if we changed up our lawmakers and so forth?
Yeah, and who's giving them money? Because that's the controlling factor here, right?
Of signing
that. I think it should be like NASCAR and everybody wear the logo on their jacket of who they're really representing. Because they're really not representing us anymore. Right.
But that information is out there. You know,
it is.
None of this is hidden. It's all public. It's all part of the process.
And you're absolutely right. That's a very good point. Because and those are things that you do if you know about that.
If you know about it.
If you know that you can go online and pull out who's giving money to
you. Might not be able to do it for Trump because they find ways not to have to do
it. All they have to do is stay at the hotel across from the White House and, you know, up the catering bill a little bit.
Right.
Yes.
Well, look, I want to thank you guys so much for hopefully turning a couple of folks to this election season. And we'll come back and talk about it again as we get a little bit closer. I hope that winnowing down occurs sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think it will.
It will.
Thank you so much, Yolanda Dryerboards Lattimore. Thank you, Dr. William Boone from Clark Atlanta University, for coming and having a political Saturday morning.
Always a pleasure.
Take care.